Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, your weekly guide through matters crucial to families and the preservation of traditional values in the Commonwealth and beyond. Archives of this and past shows are available at afaofpa.org. Now your host, a dedicated advocate for family values and the director of the American Family Association of Pennsylvania, Diane Gramley.
Since September 11, 2001, we have seen a change in Americans' view towards and attitude towards Islam. We are increasingly told that Islam is a religion of peace. While we see Christians dressed in orange jumpsuits kneeling, waiting to be beheaded by Muslims, we see Christians and Jews targeted for harassment and violence. What does the Quran say about Muslims' interaction with those who do not embrace Islam? Are there moderate Muslims? Islam is in the news almost every single day. My guest today is Bill Federer. He's a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of American Minute, Inc., a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. He has written or contributed to over 30 books and is a frequent guest on television, radio, and podcast. He produces the How We Got Here video series for TurningPointEd.com. We'll be talking about his book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. That's what we're going to do during this interview. Thanks, Bill, for being with us, and thanks for writing this book.
Well, it's great to be with you.
So what inspired you to write this book? I'm trying to think. It was early 2007 was, I think, the first copyright date on this. So about 6 years after 9/11. So what inspired you to write the book?
Well, Keith Ellison swore into Congress with his hand upon a Quran, first congressman ever to do that. And it just happened to be Jefferson's Quran. And the news media said, isn't this wonderful? Jefferson owned a Quran. He must have loved Islam. Mm. And anyone that knows anything about history is the day after Jefferson's inauguration, he gets a demand from the Pasha of Tripoli for $250,000 extortion tribute payment. And Jefferson said, I sent in the Marines. And it's called the Barbary Pirate Wars. And so Jefferson owned a Quran to figure out what's in this book that makes them want to attack us. So previously, Jefferson had been ambassador to France. And in 1793, the Muslims captured the ship Polly. They captured another ship, you know, all the way back to 1784. They captured the Betsy. They captured 37 ships and enslaved 700 Americans in the dungeons of Algiers, Tunis, and Tripoli.
Wow.
So Jefferson is an ambassador to France, and he goes, why are you attacking us? And he said, the ambassador, Abdurrahman of Tripoli, said that it was in the laws of their prophet that every nation that does not acknowledge Islam's authority were sinners, and it was a right and duty to make them slaves, and every Muslim that should be caught, killed in battle is sure to go to paradise.
The left, I'm going to interrupt right quick, but the left says the United States is the only country that had slavery. Go ahead. I mean, what you just said just totally negates that. Yeah.
So Muhammad was a white Arab who owned black slaves. Mm. There are hadiths that said he is the white man reclining on his arm. Another hadith that the person's donkey rubbed up against Muhammad's, and he said, I saw the whiteness of the prophet's thigh. Another hadith, somebody said they saw him lift his arms and they saw the whiteness of his armpits. And Muhammad owned black slaves. There are hadiths that said he was a good slave trader. One time he traded one black slave for two. Mm. And so in Islam, they had slaves. Muhammad gets verses from his Allah that he gets the slave girls that he captures from raiding caravans as his booty. And then when he dies, he was poisoned by one of his wives and eventually died. But then the Muslims conquer all of Arabia, which used to be Christian. You know, there used to be a Christian kingdom there in Yemen and a Jewish and Christian kingdom. And then they conquered Syria, which used to be Christian. And then they conquered Egypt, which used to be Christian. And they conquered Jerusalem. Matter of fact, when they conquered Jerusalem, the Byzantine bishop negotiated a deal. Instead of two choices, convert or die, you get a third choice. You can be a dhimmi, a second-class citizen who has to pay taxes to your new Muslim overlords.
And we heard
called the jizya.
Okay, yeah, we heard a lot about that when ISIS was running, you know, the whole ISIS thing was happening under Obama. Heard a lot about that tax.
Yeah, and if you don't pay the tax, you're no longer part of the agreement, and they can sell you and your wife and daughters into slavery. And then the Muslims, when they conquered Egypt, Amir ibn Alas is the Muslim leader. He promises to help the Coptic Christians drive out the Byzantine Christians. So we see that there was this terrible persecution going on within Christianity. And of course, once the Muslims drove out the Byzantine Christians, they decided to stay and they cut out the tongues of anybody caught speaking the Coptic Egyptian language.
Wow.
So some towns had piles of tongues. They literally eradicated an entire national language and brought in Arabic from Arabia. And then there used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa, Morocco, Algiers, Tunisia, Libya. It was all Christian. St. Augustine of Hippo is from Carthage. Today, that's Tunisia. But the Christians had taught themselves not to fight. It was their version of separation of church and state. If you're really spiritual, you'll just withdraw and pray. And as a result, the Umayyad Muslims conquered all of North Africa in 10 years. And then they crossed the Strait of Gibraltar and conquered Spain. A Muslim general named Tariq, and he had landed at a mountain. So they call it, the word for mountain is Jabal. So they called it Jabal Tariq Gibraltar. So the Rock of Gibraltar, that's Jabal Tariq. That's where Tariq landed with 80,000 Muslims, and they had stirrups and scimitar swords and Arabian horses, and the Europeans were still fighting on foot.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Muslims would attack one kingdom, and the other ones would stand back and consider that kingdom as competition. They had it coming to them, and they were glad to see them taken away. And then they conquered another kingdom, and the other ones stand back and let it get taken away. Then they conquered. They would pick them off one by one. In 10 years, they conquered all of Spain. They crossed the Pyrenees, conquer southern France. You read the story of the Battle of Bordeaux. In one pass, the Muslim cavalry annihilates the entire Frankish army. And so they're stopped at the Battle of Tours in 732 AD by Charles Martel, the grandfather of Charlemagne.
Okay.
And so for the first 100 years, they go from Arabia to Paris in a military campaign. And since this is the first century of Islam, the fundamental Muslims view that as the example, the same way we look at the first century of Christianity as our example. But Jesus and the apostles never killed anybody. And so we see the difference between voluntary and involuntary.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that all the Middle Eastern countries that you mentioned, it makes sense that they were Christian during before the Muslims came in. I hadn't thought about Syria, and I knew Egypt and parts of Africa, but I hadn't thought about Syria being Christian also, which makes sense because the disciples went out from Jerusalem into, you know, the outermost parts of the world to spread the gospel. So it makes sense. And then the Muslims.
Yeah, the name Christian was invented in Syria.
Oh, really?
The very name Christian. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the Apostle Paul evangelized Syria. There's more ancient Christian writing in the Syrian language of Syriac than any other language other than Greek or Latin.
Wow.
And it was in 648 AD that Caliph Umar conquered Syria. And then they conquered into Armenia. And then they conquered into Persia. And this is where it gets interesting because the Persians were civilized. You know, we're talking Daniel and Esther mm-hmm. and Cyrus of Persia. And the Arabs were illiterate desert raiders. And so when the Muslims conquered Persia, there's a moderating effect on Islam called the Islamic Golden Age.
Okay.
And they had scholars studying Greek and philosophy and medicine and math. And Al-Rashid was the sultan in Baghdad. And he allowed Buddhists and Christians and women to talk in his court. He received ambassadors from Charlemagne. And he sent back presents like a clock and, you know, the 1001 Arabian Nights and all this stuff. And if you were to take a snapshot of the world, you would have thought that Islam's about to experience the Renaissance. But then the Mongols come and they conquer and they sack Baghdad and burn the big library that had thousands of books. Mm-hmm. And the Turks end up becoming the next big Muslim power. And they invade into what is today Turkey. And so all seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were wiped out by Muslim Turks. And so the Greek Christians begged the Catholic West for help, and the West sends help. It's called the Crusades.
Okay.
Nine major Crusades over 200 years. When the Crusades end, the Muslims conquer Constantinople in 1453, ending the land trade routes from Europe to India and China. So that's when Columbus set sail in 1492 to find a sea route. Columbus would have never set sail had it not been for Islamic Jihad conquering Constantinople in 1453.
All the moving parts came together with the closure of the trade routes and then Columbus discovering us, discovering the new world.
Yeah, and so as the Muslims were invading into what is today Turkey, it used to be the Byzantine Empire, and conquering into Greece, the Greek scholars flee west to Florence, Italy, bringing their Greek art and architecture and literature, and this is called the Renaissance.
Okay.
This flood of Greek stuff into Florence is called the Renaissance, and they flee with their Greek New Testaments. And so this is when a European scholar named Erasmus translates the Bible from Greek into Latin.
Okay.
And one of his friends is Martin Luther, and he starts the Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
So we may not have had a Reformation had it not been for the Muslims conquering Greece and the Greek scholars fleeing west with their Greek New Testament.
Right. Wow. That is really neat. Back to President Jefferson. So what we called Barbary pirates, they were Muslims who were commandeering our ships out on the open sea and enslaving our sailors. And President Jefferson stepped in and got the I would assume, the Quran to try to get the mindset of the Muslims and why they were doing this. And he sent in the Marines. And I always found it very interesting that, you know, we still call the Marines the Leathernecks, but that's because to save their heads, shall we say, they would wear leather collars or whatever around their neck so they couldn't be beheaded. It's my understanding of that's the history behind the term leatherneck, which we still use for the Marines.
That's their tradition.
Uh-huh.
Also, the Marines, Presley O'Bannon was one of the Marines, and he was, after their victory, he was given a curved scimitar sword, and that became the Marine sword.
Oh, wow, neat. Yeah, because it is on their emblem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the song, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of
Tripoli. Yep.
Tripoli.
Yeah. Wow.
Interesting that when the victory of the Barbary Pirate Wars happened, Francis Scott Key writes a song to the same tune that 9 years later he writes the Star Spangled Banner to.
Interesting.
And the song is called When the Warrior Returns from Battle Afar, 1805. And it says that the pale beamed the crescent, its splendor obscured by the light of the star-spangled flag of our nation, and the turbaned head bowed to the terrible glare, and the laurel, you know, shall be, you know, the mm-hmm. wave and, you know, and the home of the brave. So you see some of the words that he basically rewrites after the War of 1812
right.
To write our Star Spangled Banner. But originally he wrote it to celebrate the victory of the Barbary Pirate War.
Right. Now, you know, we talk about Keith Ellison, but now we have a New York mayor, Mondami, who is also Muslim. And during, I think he more than likely took his oath of office on the Quran, too. I'm not positive about that, but I think he did.
Yeah, historically, Islam has spread two ways, fast way through the sword, slow way through immigration.
Mm.
And the immigration jihad is called Dawah, D-A-W-A. And so this is where Henry Ford had car factories in Detroit, and he hated unions. And he's traveling the world looking for an alternative source of rubber because it came from plants. And he's in the Middle East, and a Yemeni man puts his luggage on the boat and does such a good job. Henry Ford says, show up in Detroit, I'll pay you $5 a day. Well, this starts Arab immigration into Detroit.
Oh,
and
wow.
they do not join unions, and they work hard, and they're nice. They don't join unions, let more in. More come in, they work hard, they don't join unions, let more in. More come in. But then they get an imam, mm-hmm. and he shows up and he says, okay, now that we're all here, let's form a community, an ummah. And they started the first Arab association in America. And then they start the first mosque in America. And then he begins to coach them and say, we need to get a little bit more faithful in following the Quran. Sir, I saw your wife out shopping and she was dressed immodestly. And he goes home and he says, you embarrassed me in front of the imam. You start covering up. And then he says, sir, I heard that your daughter was at a public swimming pool wearing a swimming suit. He goes home, yells at his daughter, no more swimming pool. And then he says, I saw you having lunch with an infidel. You're not supposed to be close friends with infidels. And so the imam gradually gets these Muslims to become more fundamental. And then they begin to spread out across the country. And but the
I'm going to interrupt right quick. So I'm not sure where Dearborn is in association to Detroit when you're looking at a map. But, I mean, that is, I believe the largest Muslim, may not be now with Minnesota, but it's, if not the largest, it's one of the largest cities in the U.S. with Muslim residents.
So, yeah, it used to be a poll. There's Detroit, there's Dearborn, there's Hamtramck,
okay,
which
yeah.
used to be a Polish neighborhood, mm-hmm. and then they became liberal and had their first lesbian mayor. And they're like, oh, we get to tolerate everything. And then they tolerated Islam and the Muslims took over and voted the lesbian out. And now they have calls to prayer 5 times a day, beginning at 4 or 5 in the morning. And the inhabitants of the neighborhood say, my neighborhood's changed, and they move out and the Muslims take over the neighborhood. And so that's the 3-step process. Immigrate, increase, eliminate. Come in as an immigrant and mm-hmm. then build a community. And then you have get involved in politics, and then you have random outbreaks of violence, and the previous inhabitants of the community no longer feel safe, and they move out,
leaving the door open.
It goes back to Muhammad. So he was a religious leader in Mecca, and he gets chased out of town, and he goes to Medina, and there's 3 Jewish tribes that control Medina, and they're nice. They let Muhammad in as the first ever Muslim immigrant. A couple months ago, Mondami said, my religion began with Muhammad being an immigrant, a stranger into Medina. Well, what happened next? Muhammad gets offended at one of the Jewish tribes, there were 3 of them, confiscates their property, chases them out of town. And the other 2 Jewish tribes sort of stand back and say, well, they were always competition for me. Now there's 2 Jewish tribes. Muhammad picks on the smaller of the 2, confiscates their property, chases them out of town. And the big Jewish tribe sort of stands back and says, well, I always hated that tribe. It was sort of like, you know, this Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah. It's like, I just, mm-hmm. all I can think of is I hate that other party so bad. And if you're willing to help me against them, oh, it's all the better. Now there's only 1 Jewish tribe. And according to the Hadith, Muhammad is taking a bath and a spirit appears to him and says, how can you rest when all his enemies are in your midst? And he says, where? And it points at that last Jewish neighborhood. And Muhammad surrounds them for 28 days, brings them into the market and chops off their heads, 700 of the men, and then sells the women and children into slavery. So within 5 years of Muhammad coming into the Jewish city of Medina as an immigrant, there is not a Jew left in the city of Medina. So the 3-step process is immigrate, increase, eliminate. Immigrate as a refugee, increase and get involved in politics, and then you have random outbreaks of violence. The inhabitants move out and you take over.
Plus an increase, I mean, they have large families too. So you can look at increase that way too, but with the large families, there's more of them. And stay tuned. We'll catch up with Bill in part 2. Remember Islam's 3-step plan: immigrate, increase, eliminate. Note, assimilate is nowhere in their plan.
Thank you for joining us on American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. Please note that the views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the AFA of Pennsylvania. We value your opinions as well. To continue the conversation, visit afaofpa.org, where you'll find links to all our social media. If you're passionate about defending traditional values in our state, we invite you to get involved with the American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Visit our website at afaofpa.org or write P.O. Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323 to learn more and to take action. Together, we can make a difference for the families and the future of Pennsylvania.